Call this meeting to order. This is the Women in the Economy Commission, January 17, 2018, and the room is full and abuzz with excitement for the session, which starts on Monday. We have several people who are here to make presentations on bills that are of interest to the commission. And before we turn our time to them, we have some folks from the Utah Interactive who would like to make a presentation to us briefly on our website. So let's see. Let me turn the time to Commissioner Barnett for a couple of introductory remarks.
Thank you. We're really excited for 5 minutes to have Utah Interactive. I believe Senator Commissioner Deidre Henderson mentioned that when you Google, it doesn't come up. The search doesn't come up. So I met with them last Friday. And then a couple of other things we're going to talk to you about, especially where we're doing all of these various bills. How do we track them? Where do we put them on the website? We've got that all taken care of, and we're going to show you how to do that. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being here. And your looks like you're up on the video. And if you could just introduce yourself, that'd be great. Thank
you. I'm Michael Rice with Utah Interactive.
I'm Jesse Cooley with Utah Interactive.
So just to show you where the website is, the URL is women.utah.gov. And I'm just going to pull it up right here. Oh, let me get into the Wi-Fi. So this is the commission's website. You go there with women.utah.gov, and I won't take the time to go through the website, but it sounds like you just need to know how to get to it.
Just one thing, we're going to be changing that the faces there, so we'll be making that very diverse and changeable. Thank you.
I think that might have been in the word.
Okay, so I've just pulled up my phone. I want to show you a mobile application. It's called Bill Watch. It's a free application you can download for your Apple devices or your Android devices. And what it does is allows you to search and save bills that you're interested in. And I'll show you how to do that. But once you've downloaded those bills to your phone, anytime the bill moves through the legislative process, your phone will get an alert saying it just passed this committee or it just got voted on. And I'll show you the status, and you can click on it and go read the bill again if you'd like, or see more details about where it's been through the process. You can search for a bill. So I'm searching for Senator Henderson's bills. So we can find them here. And if you just select on the checkbox right there, then it's saved to your phone, to your device, and then you'll get alerts as it moves through the process. You can also create custom lists of bills that you want to share with other people. So you'll create a name for the list. Excuse me.
That'll be WIEC 2018 bills tracking.
So there'll be a Women in the Economy shared list.
Mm-hmm. 2018.
And then once somebody who creates that can add bills to that for over time, and if you save that list to your phone, then you'll be able to get whatever bills they add or subtract from that list. So that's just a short little plug, and that's any questions about the website or
Did you mention how they get to it from this website? That this little ribbon across here, elevating the status of women, is going to read something about what?
View current bills or view current legislation.
View current legislation. Now click on that. It'll go to the impact page.
And we'll have a list of the bills that you're watching here, as well as the names of the Bill Watch shared list.
Yeah. And also, then it'll show you, you're going to have, so they can click on that app or how to get to that.
Correct.
Thank you so much, Senator Henderson. Thank you. So when I just Googled just now Women in the Economy Commission, and it popped up that it was the meetings material page, which is great, Department of Workforce Services, but I still don't find the website when I Google that.
We're working with Google on that. They're,
okay.
Should be crawling, and it should be showing up anytime now.
Okay, but that is an improvement over the last time I tried to do it. We didn't get anything, so this is good. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking time to be here, and Commissioner Barnett for tracking this down and bringing this forward to us. So Bill Watch is the app, and we should all get on that shared list, WIEC20.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I have the... All right, we appreciate several of our colleagues being here with us today to make some presentations on bills that might be of interest to us. We're going to start with Representative Quinn. If you'd like to come forward, and we appreciate your being here.
Thank you, and thank you for letting me preempt the agenda, particularly Representative Cutler, for letting me take this place. Last night I received an email from a group that's been following one of the bills that I'm sponsoring and wanted to know if I would come and present here today. I have to leave quickly to go to Park City for another engagement, so thank you again. I'll be brief, and if there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. The bill that I was asked to discuss is HB, I believe, the number is HB 148. It is an attempt to remove the state portion of sales tax on food. It's a fairly straightforward and simple bill. It does not change the categorizing of food and non-food items that we purchase at the store. It just simply goes to remove the 1.75% state tax. That's about an $88 million revenue shortfall to the state. If I had it my way, I would say that we would just find a way to make that up in the different ways that we allocate and spend funds, but I thought it might be an easier sell if I kept it revenue neutral. So the proposal is to add 0.24% to the general sales tax rate on everything that is purchased other than food. If we look at that in real terms, every $1,000 that you and I spend a month that is on non-food items, it's a $2.40 tax increase. I do not believe that that's burdensome to most of us. However, I do believe that sales tax on food is a burden to many young families, and particularly to the elderly who are on fixed incomes, who spend a disproportionate amount of their income on food, which obviously is a necessity. When you and I decide if we want a new suit or a new pair of shoes or whatever, we can make those decisions based on our family budget. When we decide whether or not we're going to buy food, that's a little more difficult of a decision to make. So I know that this isn't, I'll just be honest, I know that this isn't a popular bill amongst some of my caucus colleagues. We talk often about conservative tax policies being to lower the rate and broaden the base, and while I agree with that in principle, this to me is not an economic bill or issue. It's an issue of morals. So that's my bill in a nutshell.
Thank you very much. We have questions or comments on the bill. And just as a reminder, this is not a formal, bill presentation and hearing. It's really a discussion, and so we'll go to Senator Henderson.
Thank you. And just to remind everybody, we have a much lower rate of state sales tax on food than on the rest of the items that are taxed currently. And since they took it off, since they lowered that rate, they've been trying to put it back up. And I really appreciate Representative Quinn for his efforts here. I don't know if this is a policy that's going to pass, but what it has done already is taken off the table any talk of raising that rate back up. And so I applaud him for that.
Thank you. Commissioner Wallace.
I'm a numbers person, and I know you said it was it revenue, a net revenue? I'm wondering what right now is maybe the total of money spent in the state on food versus other items, and do you know any trends in the last few years where ones, if that's increased or decreased over the last handful of years?
If memory serves me correctly, Senator Henderson sits on the committee, the Revenue Tax Committee, during the interim that I was on, and we looked at those numbers. I think it's $8 billion. That was spent on food. To your point as the rise and fall of those numbers based on the economy, we didn't look so much at that, but what we did look at is there a disparity in good times and bad times between food and non-food purchases? So is food a more stable source of revenue? And the numbers are the graph that we were shown by Thomas Young from the fiscal analyst offices. Even in the worst of economic times, the disparity between food and non-food items was almost negligible. When you consider the amount of money spent on food versus non-food items, it even makes it more negligible. So there was no stability argument. In my mind, there's no stability argument to be made for keeping it on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any just one question as it relates specifically to our some of the constituents throughout the state that we kind of keep a watchful eye over, which are in that might be specifically impacted by this bill, are single moms working, putting food on the table for their families, and wondering if you could talk about how this would impact specifically low income families and what the impact on them might be.
Again, when most of society, when most of us in this room decide what to have for dinner or for a meal, some of the choices that are before us is, do we go out and eat? This bill does not affect any food that we buy at a restaurant. It's only for those the items that are bought in the grocery store. And for those low-income people, that's where their choice often lies because it's the only choice they have. The numbers part of this is that the average family would save about $90 a year from not having to pay this tax. And to most of us, $90 a year, again, that's just one discretionary item that we may decide to buy throughout the year. For these families that this bill is intended to help, sometimes that's a big deal to them. That may be a birthday that they otherwise couldn't have for one of their children, or a few Christmas presents that they otherwise couldn't have. So while it's minimal to most of us, I think it's a big impact to many of the families that this is targeted towards. One of the comments that was made in a committee meeting about this was, the people who are on WIC or food stamps or other government programs to help them buy food already don't pay sales tax. And my point to that was, and again, we may be looking at two different segments of society, although it would benefit many. Many of the elderly that live in my district who run fixed income, Social Security, they would, for whatever reason, you can call it pride, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, they would never go on any type of government assistance. So this is really targeted for me. This is really targeted at them. To help those who would never go on a government program, but yet who are on fixed incomes and every dollar counts.
Thank you for mentioning the elderly and folks on fixed incomes. I think sometimes they get forgotten as we take policy discussions on different issues, and I appreciate your focusing on that as well.
And one, if I can make one other comment, Representative, another issue that we look at and are trying to tackle in revenue taxes is property taxes. And the potential for those to rise based on some other policy decisions. The elderly in our society, many of them have paid their homes off years and years ago, and then they become a tenant of the government. We're their landlord, because if they don't pay those property taxes in 3 years, we get to kick them out. So we've hit them in every other area. If this is one area that we can provide some relief, then to Senator Henderson's point, this is a tough bill as far as getting passed, but I'm still willing to tackle.
Great, thank you very much, and thanks for being here. Good thank luck
you.
Getting to Park City.
Thank you.
Oh, just question. Really quickly.
You don't want me to make it to Park City.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask you if you would you like, what we do is we can make a motion to supporting concept, opposing concept, or ask for additional information. I was wondering if you would welcome a supporting concept motion being made by the commission on your behalf?
Absolutely. Most of the groups that have said that they support this bill are groups that normally would not support my bill, so
okay,
I would
super.
Be more than grateful for that.
All right, super. I will make that motion then that the commission support in concept of Representative Quinn's bill on removing state portion of sales tax. And that's it.
Second. We have discussion to the motion. Commissioner Burkholder.
No, I was actually going to
you
make
the
motion, so I'm in full support.
Great. All right, seeing no discussion, I don't know if we really, should we be going to the public?
I think in the interest of time,
in the interest of time,
wait.
Yeah. We could do just a motion of hands, those in the audience who are supportive of this bill, just out of interest. Please raise your hands. Any of people who would be speaking against or have, okay. Just let the record show that is you have 100% support with the folks who are here today.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Let's take a vote. All in favor of making an official recommendation of support for Representative Quinn's HB 148, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that you receive our support.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, Representative Cutler.
Thank you. Yeah, good to be with you this morning. And when my laptop gets going here, I do have a presentation to show. Want to lock in? Very much. I've been asked to talk about the HB 164. We gotta get off the screen here. Okay. The Early Learning Task Force. This past year, I was nominated for an NCSL Early Learning Fellows program that was held a couple of times. One time in Nebraska, the other time in Denver, Colorado, where. We talked about the early learning challenges that we have with children. And I have, in the meantime, been visiting at least most of the schools in my district, as well as some of the schools, Salt Lake County, as well as San Juan County, and talking to a lot of the early childhood education, primarily the kindergarten, first grade teachers. And it's been brought to my attention that a lot of children are going into kindergarten not prepared for kindergarten. Some are in the more affluent areas where they have parents that are at home and can spend time with their children, but a lot of the other areas where both parents may be working, or the single parent may have two jobs trying to support the family, and the best they can do is to get home, fix the dinner, put them to bed, and get them up the next morning, get them off to school. And they may be, before going to school, just putting them off to some kind of a daycare, not necessarily a quality preschool daycare, but just someplace to get children taken care of. And so as I pondered that, I thought, okay, what do we do as a state of Utah? And discussing this with Representative Lowry Snow in one of our meetings, he says, you know, I would be supportive of some kind of a task force, some kind of a study group that could say, you know, what are we going to do as a state of Utah to address the needs of our preschool children? We have a lot of private things, some good, some not so good. We have kind of a quality preschool program that they can certify for. You know, we as the state of Utah don't have any organized preschool program. Now, that's a big step for the state of Utah. I listened to a presentation given again by NCSL, who had a group from Mississippi, who we think sometimes, similar to Utah, they're very strapped for money. But they have a program, limited, but it is a program. So what I'm proposing here, and again, love to have your thoughts on it, is a task force, and I'm going to talk about who's on here. We may change this, who the makeup is. At this point, it would be three representatives, three senators, one member of the State Board of Education, a representative or the superintendent of public instruction, and the director of office and child care. Particularly as far as how those are appointed, right now we're kind of looking at how's the best way to get those representatives and senators appointed. I even thought about just having that be the education interim committee chairs do that. So right now I think the bill reads that the speaker and the president of the Senate do that. I've heard there might be some concerns because of the volume of work they have to do. But the concept is we've got a group of senators and representatives and a member of the Board of Education, a representative from the state, the superintendent, and one from the Office of Child Care that will come together, and the purpose is to review early learning in Utah. What do we have? There's a report, SB 100, from last year. The report just came out, and it states that, yes, Utah does not have a good organized program to provide for that early learning child care, and we need a program like that. So first of all, I'll review that report and any others, and then recommend some policies, and the goal being to improve kindergarten readiness. Okay. And we now are going to have a kindergarten test that children can now take that at least can help validate that if we do this, are we going to improve the preparedness of these children? You know, I was talking to some kindergarten teachers. And by the way, they have to present something by the end of next year or this year. Talking to some of these kindergarten teachers, they said, you know, I have some of these children, they don't know how to hold a pencil, they don't know how to hold a book, they don't know how to turn the pages on a book, they don't know what a letter is, they don't know what a number is. And that's what the kindergarten teachers, and a half day of kindergarten doesn't cut it to help these kids. A lot of Title I money is being used to extend the half day kindergarten to a full day. Should the state of Utah go to a full day kindergarten? That's what I want this commission, this task force, come back and say, should we go to a full-day kindergarten? Should we have some for those needy children? I hate to say needy, but children who don't have other sources of training. What do we do as a state? I believe we need to say, you know, let's decide this. And I don't think it's for me as an individual legislator to decide. I'd like to have a group of individuals come together and really dig deep on this issue and say, what will the citizens of the state of Utah support? And does this require some additional taxes? Maybe it does. What is the recommendation here? And so again, I'd say I've been out to a lot of schools this past year here in Salt Lake County as well as down in San Juan County. My wife and I took a trip down to San Juan County and visited the Synod Guy. I guess how you say it. It's a Navajo school. I visited a couple, three Navajo schools, one in Bluff, one out in Monument Valley. Also visited Monument Valley High School. Block my name with the other one. A couple of the high schools down there, and of course on the Navajos, they have they want to remain in their homes, but the parents are not, some of the children are not being prepared. So there's a lot of concerns of kindergarten teachers, and how can we better prepare them? Kindergarten teachers sometimes are considered half-class citizens because they're only there for a half day, and that's sad because they do a great job, and we need to say, what can we do? And again, as I'm mentioning, Utah really has no state-sponsored program. Just to let you know, this is kind of a map of the states, if you can differentiate the colors. So basically, Idaho, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Utah, and I think New Hampshire are the schools that don't have a program. All the other states in the nation have some sort of four-year-old preschool program. So Utah is amongst the minority of states that has no state-sponsored program. So in a nutshell, that's the proposal to decide what do we do. Or maybe we come back and say, no, we're not going to do anything. Maybe we can't support them. Maybe the state of Utah doesn't want to get into a preschool program. But that's what this task force will do. So that's my presentation.
Great, thank you very much. So we're going to go to some questions from the committee. Commissioner Burkholder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue of child care and early education is really critical for women who need or want to work. I have a question and perhaps a recommendation for you to consider in terms of the composition of the task force.
Right.
There are child care and early childhood education providers around the state who work on a daily basis with children and whose expertise might be very important on the commission itself, whether you confine those to nationally accredited early education centers or include Head Start. There are a number of possibilities for that. And you may also want to consider a consumer, a young mother or father who has a tremendous stake in the education and future of their children who might bring a valuable perspective as
right.
well.
I appreciate that. And I figure that we're going to kind of see what the committee ends up being. But the concept, I hope, get the concept. So, but thank you for that, for those ideas. Appreciate that.
Great. Representative Chavez Allen. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this to us to consider. A couple of questions. Looking at the study, that Senator Milner's bill proposed. And if you could tell me what distinguishes the work they did in making evaluations and providing recommendations for early childhood care versus where you're going with this particular task force, help me understand if they're, how you're eliminating redundancies, or is it to complement, or what do you have in mind there?
In the bill, it actually says they should use that report as one of their primary sources of information. The report's got a lot of great data in it, and so I put that in the bill that it should use that report rather than regenerating something that is there. And
so to complement it or to augment it, what do you, again, could you help me understand where you're going with requests from this particular task force that would be different?
Well, as I saw that, correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be misunderstanding, but that the report came out with a bunch of recommendations that, yes, we need to do something, but it didn't specifically say what we should do or how far we should go or how much we should do, and that's what I'm interpreting is now we have the data, now let's figure it out, let's get the real details of how are we going to solve this and what are we going to do. Here's some suggestions of gaps that it mentions in their reports. Here's some gap analysis. All right, how are we going to fill those gaps? And that's what I see this task force coming back and say, okay, we're going to go with a full-day kindergarten for those schools that have a certain percentage of free and reduced lunch, or we set up a mechanism to find out which children are in need, because there's a lot of data that's not there. So for that age group, we don't have a lot of data, so that we can, although some of it was certainly in that report. So I simply see, okay, now here's the gaps. How do we fill those gaps appropriately?
So a second question I have for you is related to the work that United Way has been doing with the, what was the Pay for Success program for preschool programming. And have you had a chance to have a conversation with them to see how that dovetails with their plans going forward?
I have not. Okay. I'll make a note of that.
I would highly encourage you to touch base with them, because I know they are looking at how to grow the program, because it's been very successful, but it's always an issue of resources and scaling it to a space where more children statewide could benefit from it, those children in San Juan, as you mentioned. The commission conducted a study, and it's on our website. You can take a look at the reports that are published there, that was funded by the Walmart Foundation, where the Kim Gardner Policy Institute, Commissioner Robinson led the charge on that, and the YWCA was our fiscal agent, to look at needs in the broader community, statewide, families, what their issues were. And these issues related to early childhood really percolated to the top, no matter where these families were from. That was probably one of their major concerns, was how to assure quality care and education for their younger children. So again, complimenting you on it, but I would encourage you to touch base with United Way and some of the other the other groups, YWCA and others, that are providing these types of programs. And then also Early Childhood Utah. Have you talked to that group?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Commissioner, okay. Seeing none, do we have any action on this piece of legislation? There we go. Commissioner Barnett.
I make a motion that we accept the bill as written and suggestions.
Okay.
Can do that.
The motion would be that we have a recommendation supporting concept.
We have a recommendation to support the concept.
HB 164.
Thank you.
Great. Any discussion to that motion?
Yes, and just to clarify, supporting in concept, only because there have been some recommendations about some drafting suggestions related to additional members and having conversations with other stakeholders. So just wanted to kind of make that clear in terms of what we're doing, but we like the concept. But it looks like where there's still some wordsmithing and some substantive changes you may want to make to the legislation. But I appreciate you taking in consideration the needs of our youngest Utahns and their families.
Thank you. Thank you for this good input. I think this is valuable to get some input.
Great. Then we'll come to a vote. All in favor of supporting the concept HB 164, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. You have our supporting concept recommendation.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Okay. Representative Wake, you are next on our agenda, and we will be discussing HB 156. Family Leave Amendment. Thank you very much for being here, joining us today.
Thank you. I'm happy and excited to be able to present this to you because the conversations around the idea have been growing and growing and getting more and more exciting and promising. So I believe each of you has a handout. Mine's a black and white version. Yours is a color version. Some have a blue border. So I wanted to organize the points of HB 156 in a way that seems to address the questions and issues as they've come up in other conversations. The main provisions of this bill are that it provides for paid parental leave upon the birth or adoption of a child. This would be for either or both parents. So one of the questions that has come up is if both parents were employees, both parents would still qualify for leave, and it would not be concurrent timing. So feasibly, if both parents worked, they could take consecutive leave. This does apply to full-time state employees of the executive branch of the state of Utah. And in the bill, it specifies the departments, agencies, boards, commissions, offices, so those types of positions in the state. It applies to full-time higher education employees. The amount of paid leave time is 6 weeks, and that would be in concurrent with FMLA, which is 12 weeks of unpaid leave time. So this basically would pay for 6 weeks of the leave that's already allowed at an unpaid basis. The employee has been employed, it's required that the employee be a full-time employee of the state for at least 12 consecutive months previous to the leave time. And then following leave, there are specific points in the bill that assures the parent of coming back to the same or an equivalent position. Before the parent would leave, there would be a notification. And we know that this isn't always the case that it's possible, but in most cases, parents are able to say, I'm planning to be gone from this date till this date, so that the employer would have the time to make arrangements and everybody in the workplace would have an opportunity to understand what it's going to look like. The noted benefits that have been, some of the noted benefits are listed there. One of the main ones that keeps recurring in the conversations is about 7 or 8 down. It reduces the turnover, reduces retraining costs, and increases stability in the workplace. So it increases productivity. So when I was initially looking at the type of presentation and the type of comments that I would make for this bill, I was all ready to come in with the Utah culture, we support families, we're that, you know, we want moms and dads home with their new babies and new children. What I found out right away in the very first conversation was that people, so employers think about turnover and training new people, and they get this really wild, crazy look in their eyes, and they don't even like to talk about training new hires, or even new hires. And it's occurring to the degree enough that it's on people's minds. It's not quite a panic stage, but it really makes people start to express in a very nervous way when they think about losing really good employees. And that's the other thing that happens when they have to stay home and they can't come back to work after they have to stay home, so they stay home and take care of their new kids. And then they leave their jobs because they want to, need to, and are able to. And then the employer is faced with having to hire and train a new person. The top one on that list, reduces infant mortality. That was another one that kind of surprised me, at least as far as being as notable as it is. It does turn out that all sorts of things that we look at from a parent and mother's point of view are turning into more social issues and economic issues. And that infant mortality rate is one that I think people would be surprised. I'm waiting for specific numbers on that. There was recent research done by the University of Connecticut. We do know that children are more likely to get vaccines, that mothers are able to continue breastfeeding for as long as they want and need to. Mothers are less likely to suffer depression, which is another element and piece of the discussion that's turned into an economic piece, because all of the things that cause mothers, and we know also fathers, to come back to work after a newborn or an adoption, all of the things that are going on at home that cause parents to wonder or worry turn into distractions and lower productivity in the workplace. So when we get down to the bottom section where it's points of discussion, these are the kinds of questions that have been coming up. This is not the first time a version of this bill has been introduced to the legislature. And there have been some minor changes, no real significant changes, but during the time that since the first version was presented, there have been more and more pieces of information to support the idea. We've met with the manager of the human resource for the state during the transition. So, no, I just spaced her name, Debbie, who said that with all of the views that they've been able and the research that they've seen, they realized that this has just been a matter of when and not if the state of Utah is going to continue to be a competitive employer. So that has been reflected with, and it's even in the another bullet point, other local employers have adopted. So the LDS Church adopted this type of leave. Rio Tinto has adopted this leave in Utah, and Salt Lake City just finished its first year with paid parental leave in its policies. The other question that comes up is just the cost-benefit analysis. We don't have the fiscal note in yet on this. It continues to be controversial because we know that there are some costs there, but we can't nail them down because in any given year, from one year to the next, we don't know who's going to leave to have or adopt a child. So this is different from the annual leave and the sick leave that are already available. This is another leave, but it's going to be used by only a certain percentage, only a certain number of people in the workforce. And again, that number can shift from one year to the next. So between not being able to really estimate what the leave would cost in terms of having a substitute person come in to do the work, which doesn't always happen depending on the position, and the fact that there are so many costs already known for rehiring, retraining, the replacement of people who would leave. So there's actually more of an estimate, an idea of what it would cost to lose employees than to have them out on leave for a certain number. There is no new money proposed for this because the time that people would be leave would be covered in the same way that is already covered for leaves of the other types. And this would actually be, so for annual leave or sick leave, offices have procedures that they follow for the work to be covered, sometimes with a little delay. But those procedures and those costs are already part of the system. Part of the discussion has been people in positions like corrections officers. That requires a trained person to be put on an overtime status. But again, those positions those situations are already covered when people take annual leave or sick leave. So it's not a matter of finding new money just for this particular leave for, again, the small percentage of people who would be using it. And with that, are there any questions?
Yes. Thank you very much for being here, and your presentation will go to Representative Chavez House.
Thank you, Representative, for presenting your proposal. Has Salt Lake City been able to give some data based on their, I know first year is sometimes hard to get some good quantifiable data, but to get a feel for how many people to, so that we're not operating in hypotheticals. Now we've got at least a kind of a pilot program that has utilized this, and what were their findings?
We're waiting to hear back from them about that, because they have just completed that first year. And that was part of the very first conversation we had, was that they were aware that they were going to have some statistics to help us understand that. We do have information, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but we do have information about some other places that have paid correctly, paid parentally.
And the companies that you've mentioned, Rio Tinto and the LDS Church, are you still gathering that data? Because it might, again, getting a feel for how it's manifested itself. The more that we have examples, I think that's helpful for us and our colleagues to understand the impact.
Rio Tinto's is a pretty new policy. Okay. It's been instituted less than a year.
Okay.
And the same with the LDS Church. I think it was the LDS Church policy was announced just a few months ago.
One last question. Have you had conversations with agencies that are somewhat anxious to maybe try this out, maybe look to them to do a pilot, as a possibility, if there is a lot of hesitation to implement it more broadly?
We haven't had that conversation, so thank you for that suggestion. Mm-hmm. And partly because with the state HR management office, they're on record, and Debbie Craig has said to go ahead and say this, they're 100% behind this because they consider it such a strong point for creating more stable government, because their workforce are all of the workers in our agencies and departments in the executive branch of the state. So they're pretty excited at this idea. But the idea of a pilot is, I agree, it's a good one to have as part of the picture. Thank you.
Senator Henderson.
Thank you. Sorry, my little request to speak button does not work. So, Representative, I appreciate the work that you've done on this. And I think you're right. I think this is probably a matter of when and not if. I think it's important that we put if we're going to do this, that we put the structure in place the right way. You mentioned that there are other programs that are similar to this, that the state already has annual leave and sick leave and those types of things. The structures aren't the same for those. They're different. And we had to deal with annual leave a few years ago because the structure was such that it created this huge unfunded millions of dollars that was accrued every year in unfunded liabilities for the state that had to be dealt with. So I just recommend that you really do work through that issue so that we don't encounter the same type of problem moving forward, and that there's a good actuarial basis that we're using in order to be able to figure out what we need to fund this so that we don't get dug into a hole. And then the question that I have is, if this is something that is appropriate for the executive branch, higher education, and maybe there's a very rational, reasonable answer to this, why wouldn't we include the legislative branch in there? I know we were very small, but we have legislative employees as well. Maybe we already do this. I don't know any legislative branch. Do you know?
I don't know. So I'm making a note of that question for the legislative branch. I suspect we're going to come in under not full-time employees, because this is for...
Well, but we have staff. I mean, really the staff, not legislators.
The staff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Part of the conversation is to introduce it in one segment of the state government, just to see and answer questions that can come up, because that is an established branch. With higher ed, we've actually encountered some questions, and we're exploring just how complicated higher ed might become with talking about full-time and the way that they manage. So higher ed has a different management system from the state branch, from the state executive branch. When the attorney was drafting this, he also distinguished, the technical colleges are part of higher ed. So when we started looking at the management, the human resource management for technical colleges, they seem, and I just got this information a couple of days ago, it looks like technical colleges actually define full-time in a different way, with different hours, with different conditions, from how we're describing full-time in this bill. So that right now is actually under consideration of whether higher ed and technical colleges will be part of this, because we like the part that looks like it's going to be the best part to work. We want that to have the best possibility to work, instead of get part of it, instead of losing all of it.
I agree with that, and I think that Representative Chavez Houck had a good suggestion with starting with a pilot program, just so that we can kind of get a grasp on the costs associated with this, make sure that we're adequately funding it, and not putting employees at risk of, like we did with the annual leave, we were putting employees at risk of not getting what they were promised, because there was no money set aside to pay them that, what they were promised. So, and so we had to deal with that and have the state agencies start setting aside money, which they didn't want to do. They wanted to spend the money. But maybe this is a little bit different, because maybe this doesn't accrue, and if they don't use it, they don't get the benefit. Is that?
As I recall, this does not accrue. What had been going on with the sick leave is, in order for people to have paid leave for when they have a baby or adopt, they were accruing sick leave in order to do that. And that's still the practice now. So this would allow them to
sick leave on top of, right. Mm-hmm. But the annual leave and the sick leave were done in different manners. And there was that pool created for the sick leave that wasn't created for the annual leave. And so anyway, that was an issue we had to deal with a few years ago. And I just want to make sure that we don't encounter the same problem with this.
Good. I'm actually glad to know about that question, because in our conversations with HR management, that didn't come up, and I have the sense that issue has been managed for the sick leave, because it's not considered to be an issue for this. But I can ask that specific question to make sure how that's being managed.
Thank you. Commissioner.
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 I don't have the balls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions for you. I know you've mentioned several organizations that have recently implemented family leave. I'm wondering if you have any research or examples of companies that have already established this for a while, or even other states that are doing family leave, that we can at least have some numbers.
Do you know, I think, so I'm going to ask Stephanie Pitcher to come up because I think she's got numbers, the number piece more ready, and I think I might have it here.
I also have another numbers question if you want to address it as well. I'm wondering if you have any averages of workforce and of that workforce, the percentage of those who do take family leave, or at least those who have new children into their families.
That's the number that no one can come up with. In fact, that's kind of the mystery number because it varies from year to year. It's not a number like sick leave or annual leave. And
I'm just wondering maybe the trends. I mean, yeah. I know that my work could tell you how many people took that last year. I was one of them. So I'm wondering, there's got to be a way to at least gather a small bit of data to get an idea about, I mean, our birth rate is higher than any other state. I think we might have been passed up by North Dakota recently, but I'm thinking that information's got to be out there somewhere, at least a range, if you don't need me. Thank you.
So a couple of things I can speak to on that question. When this bill has been considered in years past, one way that we've taken a look to see if how we can predict who will be taking it is to take a look at the PEHP enrollment from the year prior. And I apologize that I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's something I'm sure we could probably get a hold of before we proceed with this. But essentially what they do is they took a look at all the new children that were added to PEHP the prior year and kind of use that as an indicator of the percentage of women who might be taking this benefit moving forward. One other thing I'll say about the fiscal note, or what I anticipate will be the lack thereof, is that as Representative Waite stated, we're not putting in any new money to this effort. These people already work and they already receive a salary. What they're doing is they're just getting a certain time of time away from the workplace, so it's not like we're putting any new money in to pay for their salary. Their salary is already paid for, they're just getting an added benefit of being home with their child for a certain amount of time. But to answer your other question, there have been a number of private companies that have offered this. I think most notably would be like Adobe, eBay, Google. Those kind of bigger tech companies are traditionally pretty good at providing paid leave benefits for families. Just some data that I do have in front of me is that when Google increased its paid maternity leave in 2007, the rate by which new moms left Google fell by 50%. There's also some really interesting statistics about women who take public assistance. Or when they don't. Women who take paid leave are 39% less likely to receive public assistance and 40% less likely to receive food stamps the year following a child's birth when they get paid leave. So there's some interesting data.
Can you share those numbers again, Stephanie, would you please?
Yeah, women who take paid leave are 39% less likely to receive public assistance and 40% less likely to receive food stamps the year following a child's birth compared to those who did not take any leave.
Thank you. Okay, let's see, Commissioner Barnett.
Thank you.
Let's see, there you go.
Thank you, Representative Waite. I am a big fan of this bill, and actually yesterday I listened to the committee hearing in 2016, and you were on that as well, Stephanie. And then 2017 again, when Representative Romero, you know, presented it, and I think they recommended that it go to interim. So my question and my concern is that this bill, as I'm reading it now, maybe I got too many phone calls and I lost my place, but I don't see anything different. I don't see anything, I see a lot more, just the same questions. I have a fiscal note in 2016 that said it would be over 9 million, there would be over 1,100 different families that would be affected in 2016. That's one of the, so I don't see when you present this, anything that's going to jump out. And that's why I really, when Commissioner Shetter mentioned that we should have maybe a pilot program. There just has to be something else. This is just too of a valuable for you to get in there, and then it's back to, it doesn't come out of committee, or there's, you see what I'm saying? What's different? Mm-hmm. You have a lot of stuff over here, a lot of questions that haven't been answered, and I don't see anything different that I can wrap my hands around. And I'm going to be following this bill on my little iPad.
So some of what we know is different is the shift in the statistics we have about the difference in the quality of early childhood living and early childhood existence, life, education, that families that can be home with their kids make. So 2, 3, 4 years ago when this was introduced, since in that time, the fact that it's being adopted, and that's where the trends are to do this, to provide papers at this time, because of and I agree, these are numbers that are good to have, because so many employers are seeing the benefit and savings by not having to pay the cost of hiring new people. But the other part of this, just even with Representative Cutler's presentation about his task force and at the United Way breakfast this morning, the talk about pre-K education, the fact that parents, and this would include fathers also, just the whole idea of being able to have parents home with their kids ends up cutting costs to society, and in this case, the social programs that create the web of support when kids miss out on the support that could be provided in the first few weeks and give that extra boost to the first few months and years. So another part of the picture that we can consider is that in most other countries, and I'm just going to name Russia, my neighbor is from Russia, 18 months of paid leave in Russia to new parents. Because, and when I talked to my neighbor about it, she looked at me as if, of course, there are children. And it makes a difference in their whole lives when we're able to spend time with them when they're new to us. And I'm an adopted mother, I'm an adopting mother. So my son came from South Korea when he was somewhere between 4 and 6, because it's a mystery. And the time that we were able to spend with him made a difference in his being supported in the entrance to a new culture. And he came at Christmas time. So he came from a Korean orphanage and made a 24-hour flight to go through immigration in Hawaii and landed in the United States, where he'd never seen a white person before except in a very official business suit. And then he met our family all clustered and crazy at Christmas time. And the fact that we were all there was one thing, but just to have that time for him to get, like I say, introduced to the culture. He didn't know about Christmas. He didn't know what these strange faces without almond eyes were. He didn't know the different body types. And so that's a picture that I have as a mother, that my guy was able to have parents around to get him going in a new situation. And I know what it's like to have an infant, and all of the time and all of the, and we can talk about bonding, but I just think of all of the routines and patterns that our babies learn in those first few weeks that make a difference in their whole lives. And those are the kinds of things that we know about that we might not be able to put numbers on. But they are the things that are making a difference to parents to choose to leave the workplace, because they value those things so much more than the particular job at the particular moment. And I'm hearing young people particularly talk about, this is my kid. That's, you know, I'm here for my kid, and that's it. So those are the kinds of arguments that we'll never be able to pin down with dollars. So I'll work on the dollars part, but I've been really impressed to hear more and more the part about and the value that people are placing and employers are being forced to recognize of people being able to spend time with their new kids.
Okay. Thank you. Last question, Commissioner Bones. Bones.
I think it's actually supposed to be pronounced Bones, but it's been Americanized over the years. Thank you, Representative Wade, for bringing this forward. I support the concept of new mothers and fathers being able to have the freedom to spend time with their new children, whether they be adopted or infants, so they can have that precious time together. I work for the executive branch, and part of my job is ensuring that the agency I work for is funded fully each year, and that can be a challenge for us. And so my concern is, why not try to get an appropriation with this if the legislative body feels like this is an important benefit that we should be offering our state employees? I hear, I'm sorry, I forget your name, but I heard you say there's no increased cost because they're already getting paid their salary. But my experience with my agency is we're paid hourly. And so if I'm paying out to my employees an additional 6 weeks of pay that I don't already have to pay, that's going to be an increased cost. And like you said, in 16, I think it was 16 or 15, 16, there was a fiscal note of $9 million, I remember this bill. So you have to anticipate that if this goes into effect unfunded, which we would call an unfunded mandate, the next following year, the executive branch agencies are going to be coming to their different appropriation subcommittees and asking for that gap of general fund. And so I think that's what Senator Henderson is concerned about, is maybe we don't have enough information yet. Like you said, we can't really for sure nail down the fiscal impact. And for me, as someone who tries to secure funding for the executive branch, that's a big concern. And so I wonder if, since you know some of these companies are just newly implementing these policies, why not wait a year and see what data they come back with? Why not wait till Salt Lake City has some firm data to share about their first year experience and then bring it forward so that we have solid numbers to work off of? And I think you could gain more support across the board because there's not that nebulous hole that we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know what kind of funding the state's going to be held accountable for in later years. So I guess that's my question. Why not try to go for some kind of an appropriation? Okay. Or wait a session until we have more data about the money?
Thank you. So I've got notes. And I appreciate all your input and the ideas and suggestions to build a stronger set of presentation arguments for this. Because there's so much support for it that whatever makes the case is what we want to work with this year. There are some distinctions, but I can hear that I want to build the distinctions between the bill and the presentation and the context for this bill today versus what it's been even in the last couple of years. Because the trends are significant. And again, I didn't know that until I was told how significant they were. But I agree with the being able to present more specific number information. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, we appreciate your being here and for the robust discussion. This is always helpful to have feedback ahead of the game. Accommodate those questions in your further discussion. We will come back to the committee for any motions on HB 156. Representative Chavez-House.
So
So I'm going to make a motion that we request additional information, Representative. We have the three options of oppose or support or request additional information. I'm feeling that the commission isn't at a place where they could support a concept totally quite yet, and I'd hate to have you leave with an opposing concept recommendation. So we have the three options, and so I'm going to make a motion that we request additional information. And hope that maybe some data. I'm really interested to see what's happened in Salt Lake City in particular, because if they can show a distinction of what things looked like before versus afterwards, and it was just a blip in terms of the number percentage-wise of employees that were affected by this or utilized it, I think that you'll have a stronger argument that, you know, scaling it might have the same impact at the state level, and or if you could explore looking at a pilot, maybe finding an agency. I'm thinking a Department of Human Services, because there are a lot of women, I believe, in their workforce, but maybe, you know, you and I can kind of look at some ideas. Maybe if you can get an agency or two who are willing to pilot it, people might get to a place of feeling more comfort of supporting this. And then that way you can at least peg an appropriation that people could wrap themselves around. So that's my motion to request additional information from this legislation. And we're thinking of maybe doing another meeting during the session. And if you have some more information at that time, then you can represent. We might be able to get the commission as a body to get a little bit closer to where you might need a support.
Good. Okay, thank you. We have a motion before us, and any discussion to that motion? Okay. Then we will take a vote on the motion for HB 156 to request additional information, and with the idea that we would hear you again in a meeting that comes during the legislative session. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that passes unanimously. We look forward to seeing you again, Representative Waite, during the session.
And thank you. Thank you again for your input.
Okay, Representative Fossen. Thank you for being here with us today and for your patience. Come on up.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. I have a lot of statistics and information I could share, and I'm not sure how much depth you want to hear about this bill, but okay, all right. Some of this I'm sure you already know, this bill pertains. I don't have a number yet. It actually just went to numbering today, so I should have a short week. But it's titled the Breastfeeding Protection Act. So health professionals and public health officials promote breastfeeding to improve infant health. And most of the data that I can share with you here is found on the NCSL website. Just search NCSL and breastfeeding. Both mothers and children benefit from breast milk. Breast milk contains antibodies that protect infants from bacteria and viruses. Breastfed children have fewer ear, respiratory, and urinary tract infections. Infants who are exclusively breastfed tend to need fewer health care visits, prescriptions, and hospitalizations, resulting in lower total medical care costs compared to never breastfed infants. Breastfeeding also provides long-term preventative effects for the mothers, including earlier return to pre-pregnancy weight and reduced risk of premenopausal breast cancer and osteoporosis. According to the CDC, and there is a lot of information on the CDC website. They have a whole section of their site that's dedicated exclusively to breastfeeding. Approximately 77% of mothers start breastfeeding immediately after birth, but only about 16% of those moms are breastfeeding exclusively after 6 months. As part of the Healthy People 2020 initiative, the national goal is to increase the proportion of mothers who breastfeed their babies in the early postpartum period to 81.9% by the year 2020. This Breastfeeding Protection Act does the following. It prohibits discrimination based on pregnancy in places of public accommodation. It permits a woman to breastfeed in any place of public accommodation and makes technical and conforming changes to three different code sections, 13-7-1, 2-3. There are several current laws that pertain to breastfeeding in Utah. 17-15-25, enacted in 1995, states that city and county governing bodies may not inhibit a woman's right to breastfeed in public. Utah Code 76-9-702 and 76-10-1229.5 state that breastfeeding a breastfeeding woman is not in violation of any lewdness, obscene, or indecent exposure laws. That was House Bill 262. And then in 2012 Utah House Joint Resolution 4 encourages employers to recognize the benefits of breastfeeding and to provide unpaid break time and an appropriate space for employees who need to breastfeed or express their milk for their infant children. So, again, on the NCSL website, it states the following. 48 states have laws that specifically allow women to breastfeed in any public or private location. Utah is not one of these states. Although on the NCSL website, it states that Utah is one of the states. We do not have this law in place, and that's exactly where I'm headed with this bill. 29 states exempt breastfeeding from public indecency laws, including Utah. 28 states have laws related to breastfeeding in the workplace, including Utah. 17 states exempt breastfeeding mothers from jury duty or allow jury service to be postponed, including Utah. And 6 states have implemented or encouraged the development of breastfeeding awareness education campaign. And Utah's not among those, unfortunately. We have already decided as a state that employers can't ask an employee to leave the premises when breastfeeding and need to make accommodations for those moms. Yet the same employer can ask a patron to leave the premises if they're breastfeeding. This accommodation, and I know accommodation, and so as a conservative Republican, accommodation is a huge negative, right? I get a lot of pushback, especially from my libertarian-leaning friends, on the word accommodation. But this accommodation requires no infrastructure or site changes and incurs no additional cost to these businesses. The accommodation could be compared directly to a pregnant mother where there's no accommodation that needs to be made for someone who's pregnant to be in a place and exist in a place that they're legally allowed to be. Utah is one of the last states, as I mentioned, there are 48, to enact laws that specifically allow women to breastfeed in any public or private location. Outside of the obvious fact that mothers should be able to, in my opinion, breastfeed in any place that they're legally allowed to be, Utah's facing the potential risk of lawsuit for gender discrimination in this area. Utah remains the highest birth rate state in the U.S. and has been rated by Forbes as one of the best states in which to raise a family. Utah is one of the 8 states in the nation with breastfeeding rates higher than 65% at 6 months. So the CDC statistics that I mentioned before, Utah is in the top percentage of states with mothers who continue to breastfeed at 6 months or greater. And the annual CDC survey on breastfeeding shows that, and they have about 4,000 participants in the survey, that 64% believe that women should have the right to breastfeed in public areas, and 63% believe that women should be encouraged to breastfeed. So why is a man sitting in front of this committee with this bill?
The right gender.
So Stephanie Pitcher here, I credit her with originating this bill, the language of the bill and the concept. My wife is a women's health nurse practitioner. And I have four kids, all of them breastfed, thankfully. And I consider myself a strong advocate for breastfeeding and understand the benefits of breastfeeding. I just don't believe that there should be a stigma around breastfeeding, that women should be encouraged to breastfeed. And I do think that in some cases it contributes to a rate of breastfeeding that's not as high as it could be because there is some public stigma. And there are stories in the media of businesses asking women to leave the premises. So with that, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you very much. And we're more than happy to have a male legislator here presenting this. It seems like a perfect fit. Let's come to Senator Henderson.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Representative Fossen, again, your bill is a really kind of an anti-discrimination bill, or is it an advocacy? I'm not sure what your bill does.
So, it does address in public accommodations, specifically pregnancy. So I just got this bill language yesterday. I'm still digging through the bill, but or we just finalized it yesterday, I should say. But basically, it says that any place that a woman may legally be, she can breastfeed. I know that there's some concerns about potentially indecency, or we don't want moms just breastfeeding anywhere, but we already address those in other areas of the code. We already address indecency laws, and we already have exceptions for breastfeeding in the indecency laws. So, and with 48 other states having those laws in place and not really having an issue with that at all, I don't see that we're jumping into anything that is risky.
So to be clear, your bill isn't a we need to encourage breastfeeding,
no,
like resolution type of bill. It is a public accommodation, which frankly, I'm stunned that we don't have this. I thought we already had this.
I thought we did.
So, okay, I just wanted to be clear on what specifically your bill was. It's more of an advocacy through saying, we need to just kind of close this little loophole in our state law.
Yeah, I mean, currently a business owner can ask a woman to leave their business if she's breastfeeding, even if she is legally allowed to be there. So,
but not if she's bottle feeding. Okay.
I don't know. I don't think there's any accommodation for that. But I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That's a bill for another year. Come back in 2019. All right, Commissioner Barnett.
So thank you. You're so proud of him, aren't you? Gee, my gosh. The Lilici group is.
Yes.
Okay. You sounded like a advocate of the Lilici group. You know, I am an advocate of breastfeeding, and
if I were capable of sitting in, I might. But
okay, but I don't. I really believe that this isn't that bill. This isn't about as Commissioner Henderson said, you're not advocating that, you've got to breastfeed your baby, it's really for this and that, because when you present it like that, there are some that just simply couldn't do that, or some that simply didn't want to, but they are absolutely 100% in favor of a woman's right to be able to breastfeed her child. So that's my only comment, is that you will be presenting this, but you're not selling the Lilici. And for those who don't know, the Lilici, they're the folks that come into the hospital and show you how to do it. So that's the Lilici, and they're very advocates, as you and your family as well are. So thank you. Thank you. Very brave. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Back to Senator Henderson.
Sorry, I'll stop talking. But I have a suggestion for your Senate sponsor. This is a great piece of legislation. I mean, I haven't read it yet, but I totally agree with the concept, and I think that I'm just shocked that we don't already have this in our state law, that I think a really great Senate sponsor would be Todd Weiler, since he seems to really like those breastfeeding bills.
Yeah.
So
He sponsored all the other ones. Or I'd be happy to also. But anyway, whoever you want.
Put two men on the ticket.
You've got some good options there. All right, seeing no further questions, we will come to the committee for action. Any motions? Let's see. Commissioner Wallace.
I motion that we support in concept this bill.
Discussion to that motion. Commissioner Robinson?
I was going to make the motion.
Okay, so we're going to take that as a yes. All right. Any other discussion? Okay. Let's go straight to the vote then. All in favor of giving this bill? Did you? Oh, you're not numbered yet. Okay, so Representative Fossum's breastfeeding bill, a support from our commission. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, you have our support.
How would you like to distribute the bill when it is numbered? Just letting me let someone know.
If you could just send it to Commissioner Bonas, and then Shelley will also, well, she'll just make sure that we get that. Or you could send it to any one of your colleagues. We'll just get it out.
I need it for the
okay.
Yeah. And we'll make sure that it gets on that list on the WIEC 2018 shared list on the bill watch.
Okay.
So thank you for your patience and waiting, but we really appreciate you presenting. This is a great bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I think we have a couple of other bills that aren't on our agenda, and possibly some things from the public. So before we move on, rather than doing that at the end of our meeting, since we're all still in the zone of bills, before we hear our subcommittee updates, I think it would make more sense to just go to the public and see if there are any folks in public who would have items who they'd like to make us aware of. And so, Erin, come on up. Are there others who would like to make a presentation? All right. Welcome, Erin and Jesse. And the time is yours.
Do you need the overhead?
No.
No. Thank you. This will be brief. Erin Jemison, Director of Public Policy with YWCA Utah.
Jesse Mandel with Voices for Utah Children.
And we just wanted to provide a really quick update because we presented a couple of meetings ago about the maternal mental health white paper that we've been working on. And I have a copy of that final paper for you all if folks would like it. We have been working with Senator Henderson, and I'm sorry she had to step out, but she has been very supportive of bringing this issue forward in the policy context. We're doing some great work with Department of Health as well that doesn't require legislation, but we are looking at, upon Senator Henderson's recommendation, at a resolution, a concurrent resolution this session. Her recommendation was that we start with that in order to start to educate her colleagues, and those are her words, and to start to get this issue on the radar and help folks recognize the impact. And she has actually passed it along to the new Senator Zender, I believe I'm saying that correctly, and he's really enthusiastic, and he'll be running a resolution around maternal mental health. Given that he was just sworn in yesterday, we don't have a draft to show you yet, but we've been working with him. And I'll let Jesse talk a little bit about what we're looking at, but basically outlining the issue, the impacts, prevalence in Utah, and encouraging state agencies and related stakeholders to look at the best practices around maternal mental health interventions and creating a better system of care in Utah. So that's what we're looking at for this session.
Yeah, I think I would only that this really is an attempt to just bring greater attention and awareness to the issue and the spectrum of, you know, from prevention all the way to treatment, and trying to highlight the different ways that we can intervene as a state and how we can coordinate across the state. And from our perspective, you know, we want to also highlight that this is affecting women, this is affecting families, this is affecting kids, so people start to make those connections that, you know, this is a community problem. So I think the resolution is good. We feel like it's a great starting point to really highlight those connections.
Thank you very much. Would you anticipate liking to be on our agenda possibly for our mid-session meeting?
That would be great.
Okay. Yeah. thank you for your work on this issue, and this is going to make a very interesting read. Appreciate having that. And we will get this posted. If you have a copy you could send over to Shelley, we could get this again posted on our website under our meeting materials.
Okay.
Yes. I'm going to ask Shelley a favor. Can you reach out to Representative Cutler and see if we can get a copy of his PowerPoint? I meant to ask that to him when he was here, and I forgot to ask if he would send that to you so you could distribute it to us.
Sure.
So, yeah, it was just helpful. It's always helpful to have the visuals, so thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we know there are other bills out there that would be of interest to this commission. For now, we'll close out our legislative session bills with a brief discussion from the two co-chairs. We'll go to Cliff Sanchez out first, and then I'll present the bill.
Super. Thank you, Madam Chair. As a result of the early childhood services study that was done under the auspices of SB 100 and Senator Milner's efforts, I am working with the various agencies that have some connectivity with the issue of early childhood care, and we're not quite there yet, so we're in the process of drafting this legislation, but there is a recommendation within the study to formalize governance and of all of the different agencies and organizations and stakeholders that connect with early child care. And so what we're basically doing is proposing the establishment of an early childhood cabinet within the Department of Workforce Services. So again, we're working with all the different stakeholders to formalize what's already in existence. Somewhat there is a early childhood Utah group that has been meeting to respond to required reporting and oversight for federal funding, but it's never been formalized as a statute. It's never been put in code that these organizations work together to provide optimal services and support for various child care agencies or stakeholders. So just taking that piece, the governance piece, out of the early childhood services study and putting some formal language around it so that going forward, all of the agencies, the stakeholders know that they have a structure that is supported by the executive branch, that's supported by the legislative branch to continue their work and recommendations that have been put forth in this study. And was interested in the presentation from Representative Cutler, so I'm trying to figure out where there are distinctions or where there are similarities. So I'll just be in communication with him moving forward as to if there are duplications, if there's a way that we could coordinate both of those efforts. They may have enough distinction to allow his to go forward and this one to go forward, but just wanted to let you know. And so it's my intention. I want to make sure that we've got the stakeholders all on board and that the governor's office is comfortable with the direction that we're going, because it would be under the governor's office to establish the early childhood cabinet, and then I'll bring that forward as we get those thumbs up in our next meeting.
Would you like a motion right now, or just?
Yeah, I prefer to wait, and just I want to make sure that I've got everybody on board, and then we'll just go ahead and because I'm thinking we're going to meet in February, so we should be able to do that. So,
okay. Any questions or discussion to that proposal? Okay. Seeing none, then I have a piece of legislation that I've been working on that relates to paid family and medical leave. And I think Representative Waite did a fantastic job describing the benefits of these programs. This bill takes a different approach to the issue of supporting families in the workplace. And through discussions really since last year with stakeholders, advocates, and the Salt Lake Chamber on the issues of how to balance families in the workplace and also the needs of growing our economy, we're seeing a gap in both paid family leave and also FMLA, and trying to find a way to address both of those issues in a way that does not include a mandate. So we have come to a place with a bill that is supported by the folks that I just mentioned, including the chamber, and it's based somewhat on the recent federal tax reform bill
using that as a model. And basically, it's a tax credit for employers who provide paid family leave for their employees. It creates an opportunity for small employers with fewer than 50 workers to also receive this tax credit if they qualify, and one of the qualifying tenets is that they must be providing FMLA type benefits. So for a current small business, let's say, who is not required by federal law to provide FMLA, if they're going to be treated equally under this bill, and they have the opportunity to receive that tax credit if they choose to provide those FMLA type benefits. This bill would go into place in January 2019, would last for 2 years. We would then gather some data on this and have a better sense for the impact, really, for tax-wise for the state. It would provide 2 weeks paid family leave for full-time employees, and then the part-time employees would be proportional to their percentage of employment. Again, there are qualifications for the employers to receive this tax credit, which is 3% of the wages that would be paid to the employee while they were taking the leave. And just as a reminder of what current FMLA coverage includes, time off to care for a serious health condition, care of a spouse, parent, or child. There's a component for military family leave during the deployment of an employee's spouse, son, daughter, or parent, and then military caregiver leave, and then also leave to bond with a new child who's born or adopted. So that's basically the piece of legislation at this point. We are not numbered, and somewhere in this building there are great minds crunching out the numbers on what we're anticipating here. But we know that there will be a fiscal note associated with this, and so we look forward to getting those numbers and getting to work on this option to address. Representative's bill is one option, and this is another option to address this need for families in the workplace. So, any questions, suggestions, comments? All right. And at this point also, I will come back when I have language right now, but when I have number and the fiscal note, because I think that's going to be an important piece of this as well. So we're going to go to our next item on the agenda then, which is subcommittee updates. Let's start with the communication subcommittee, and then we'll hear from research and end up with public policy. So let's get your mic going there. Okay, Commissioner Barnett.
Thank you, and first of all, thank you, Anne-Marie Wallace, for turning this over to me, I think. I loved it, and I hit the ground running. As you can see, I met with the Utah Internet in their office on Friday. It was very exciting. It was beautiful. So the first thing that I noticed when they brought the website up, and maybe I just haven't looked at it often, is there's just really no diversity. We were all blonde-eyed, blue-eyed. I mean, I'm green-eyed, but you know the concept. And they said that they had mentioned that they have this amazing pictures that they can put on there, because as you scale down, you'll see the commissioners. So that's the one thing. I thought, and I haven't run this by you, Commissioner Wallace, but I thought we were doing bios. I mean, if you click on there's no bio. So maybe you have that information, you could send it to me. I know I sent you a bio, but we'll think about that. The bill tracking is going to be huge. I am just really vigilant when it comes to that, because I do that for 45 days in my little office while the gentlemen are on the hill. I'm up there 1 or 2 days. So if you've got something, you text it to me or email it to me. And then I've got the little bill tracker here, and I just clicked on a bill for me that I don't even know what it is, because I don't know how to use this yet, but I'm going to learn. The search engines, as you can see, he's going to make that work, you know. We're getting there, but I couldn't find it either. And then what I want to make sure now, I'm clear, I'm going to be sending over HB 148, HB 164, and I think that's all. We have two that we need. Is there one more I've missed?
Yeah, because we are waiting for Representative Boston's billing.
Okay, I will. And if you get it or somebody gets them, I don't know if you have cell phones, but please get it to me because I can get right on there and do that. So, but I also, when I met, I brought Mallory Bateman. She's on this committee. She's a member of this committee. 20 years old. You always want to go with a 20-year-old if you can. So she came up there with me, and we had a really enjoyable time because I needed some backup because, you know, I'm a senior citizen. But thank you. So if you have anything that you need, you think there's something that needs to be posted, this, and then you mentioned Facebook. Somebody's got a Facebook out here that you said it's closed. I need to have you talk to me about that. There should be somewhere that they can, because Facebook is immediate for stuff if you can get that searching and going and all of those sort of things. Not that I really want another Facebook. I'm already doing four, but this is important for me to do. So thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Wallace.
Thank you very much. I just want to comment on how much I appreciate your being cognizant of the need that our website does have a reflection of what our estate looks like, mm-hmm. and taking the lead on that. Thank you very much. We have a question or comment from Commissioner Robinson.
Thank you so much. I just had a couple of suggestions, and we might need to get some advice from legal counsel on this. But we have a section on the website that has our meetings, and there's an upcoming meeting section completely blank right now, so I don't know what notices we need to put out, an agenda we need to put out. And then we have a past public meeting section, and I don't know if we need to keep the agenda there and the meeting minutes and any materials there. So maybe you could connect with Kathy to figure that out.
Well, okay, so would you interact to... I'm still on the mic. I can just go ahead and do this. I'm still up. So we just, that's the first thing he said to me when I saw him on Friday, is do you have a meeting, because it's not on there now. It has been posted in previous, and I said, well, I don't know if she knows to do that. He said, well, your last meeting was posted, which is on there. So you tell me what you want on there. That goes through, are you the one that gives it to them? Who does it?
Let's
I don't know.
On the mic.
Who posts it?
I've never done it before. No, I mean, the law does require it. And I'm not sure, Shelley, but do we post it on our website?
Mm-mm. He told me you go to post something.
No?
Public
post. On the public notices website.
You do. And then the meeting.
They told me that it's automatically updated on our website, and it has all the other times before. Minutes and stuff are posted still on the DWS website.
Yeah, generally when with our agency, if a commission, board, whatever falls in within our code, we just post everything on our website. But since this commission has its own website, we'll make sure that we are connecting with you on how you would like us to share that information so it can be posted, or who we should be sharing it with, so they can post it on this commission's website as well as our DWS.
So who posted it the last meeting we had, because it's on there?
On our website.
You posted it?
Yes.
So just continue to post all of our meetings. I think that's what we want. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Well, how do I post minutes and
agendas? I don't know that.
It sounds like that's a conversation for Shelley, Commissioner Barnett, and just to make sure that that's a seamless loop there.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't want to create another step for you if there's a way to just have it
populated.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you have other suggestions? Let's see. Okay, seeing no other comments, thank you very much, Commissioner Barnett. Really exciting things happening. I look forward to that app. From the research subcommittee, Commissioner Robinson.
You have to wait for the green light. Just two quick updates. The first is we are still exploring whether there's some additional funding opportunities to fund the survey research. So our office continues to look for those kinds of things. And then hopefully we'll see something that pops that fits and aligns really nicely. And then the second one is a research study that just came out in a demographic journal, peer-reviewed study that looked at the wage gap for women. And it said, the summary is, there's a wage gap for mothers even when we control for their time in the workforce. Mm-hmm. So really interesting. Yeah, great study, and we'll get that distributed so other people can see it. But it just reaffirms what we've kind of anecdotally known or we've heard from other research, that even when you have some time away from the workplace and you account for that, there's still a wage gap for moms.
Is that Utah?
It was national research, yeah.
Great, thank you very much. Commissioner Burkholder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick update on the women in education research that's being done at UVU by Dr. Catherine Jepson. We will be meeting with her on Friday, Dr. Susan Madsen, Dr. Pam Perlick, Dr. Jepson, Erin Jensen, and I will meet together and talk about that final report. So we should be seeing something soon on that.
Put a placeholder, Shelley, for the next agenda to see. I mean, let us know, but I would think you'd have something at least to report at the next meeting. I'd like to have, just plan on having perhaps Dr. Jepson do her report. Yeah. That'd be great. Super, thank you. Thanks for the update. Co-chair Chavez Howe? Public policy. Well, we haven't met as a separate subcommittee in the last couple of months because it's been this kind of de facto occurrence that we started to have conversations with various stakeholders on the issues related to public policy issues. And I, with what we're doing here in the commission itself, vetting bills, etc., and we presented, sent out the email to all the legislators inviting to come. So we're not meeting presently. We haven't met since October. But I'm kind of letting the commission be a subcommittee of the whole to vet bills as they come forward. If we see a need to do another meeting, either during the session or post-session, we will let you know and let our subcommittee members go meet also. But a number of them are already meeting within the context of their own organizations, like the Utah Women's Coalition and others are meeting to talk about different policy issues. So that's where we're at.
So, as Representative Chavez Hoff mentioned, we have, I feel as though when you said we haven't met since October, like that does not even jive with my, like, reality, because I feel like we're constantly having an opportunity to have these conversations about a variety of bills, and just really want to put out there an appreciation shout out to all the community members and advocates and nonprofits who are engaged so in such a committed way to these issues and whose work we really appreciate and depend on in many cases. So thank you very much. And we will be having a press conference on Thursday, January 25th at noon in the presentation room at the Capitol, where, as co-chairs, we will be addressing the press, talking about our work as Women in the Economy Commission and specifically the Public Policy Subcommittee, and then we will be having our colleagues present briefly their pieces of legislation that relate to our work here as a commission. And some of them we will have heard in committee, the four or five or so that we heard today, they will be there presenting, and there may be others that we're not even aware that will become aware before next Thursday, and we invite them also to have a moment during that press conference to present their bill briefly, and with the idea that we're looking at all of these pieces of legislation through the lens of family economic prosperity, and seeing how we can use the tool of public policy to engage with members of the public to help support stronger families and economic success for those who are residents of our state and really look forward to having that opportunity for the press conference. So that's at noon on first Thursday of the legislative session, January 25th. And you are all invited, and others that you may think might be interested in this issue, please join us if you can.
Where is that?
In the presentation room in the Capitol, which is on right by where the docent's office is, right west east entrance, and then
first door on the right.
First door on the right. And if we're not there right at noon, it's because we've gone longer on the floor, but we will be there as shortly after noon as we possibly can. So,
yeah. That is a noon start time through the lens of the legislative session. So be patient with our arrival. We will come when we can. All right. That brings us to the end of our agenda, except for we need a motion on the minutes from our December 5th meeting. Commissioner Wallace.
I did notice under the communication subcommittee notes that the URL is incorrect, so it needs to be women.utah.gov. So you just spelled out instead of UT. That's the only thing I saw that was not right.
Okay.
And I can motion to approve with that sheet.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good eyes. I always appreciate when someone notices something in the minutes because it's said you read them. So thank you. The motion before us is to approve the minutes of December 5th. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, our minutes are approved. And this brings us to planning our next meeting. This is always a good challenge to try and find a time during the legislative session, but we, under our organizing document of the bill, that set us into motion, we are required to meet once during the legislative session, and it will be a great opportunity to hear some of these bills that are coming forward, and also the report from Dr. Justin was mentioned. So, should we do a dual poll? Should we try and end our meeting and go offline to a discussion?
I'm good with that.
Yeah,
we've got a couple of our senators are missing the.
I need to
get a feel.
Okay,
that's fine. Well, maybe we just should do a doodle poll then.
Yeah,
okay, let's do that.
That's fine.
I think a doodle poll, and we could hopefully find a time, maybe that the second week of the session.
January 29th would be good.
Yeah, sometime during January 29th. And if you're listening or interested in coming, we would welcome you to join us, either online or in person, and you can find out the meeting by going to women.utah.gov.
Thank you.
A point of information, just so that you know, it's probably likely not going to be a Tuesday or a Thursday because we have conference meetings during lunch, but we'll try to find a lunch hour either Monday, Wednesday, Friday that we would meet that week. Okay. One final motion ahead of us then.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you very much. Non-debatable. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.